Wait for Digger's house.
Chapter 15. Digger was in his front yard, shooting baskets with his little brother, Hank, when I skidded to a halt on my bike. But Hank was the only one who seemed happy to see me. "Hey, Brady, watch this," he called out as he bounced the ball off a rusted and netless basket rim. Lowering my bike to its side, I took off my backpack and set it on the wheel, my eyes fixed on Digger, who was retrieving the basketball and still hadn't said a word. Did he suspect something? Had he been dreading this moment for a long time? When I started walking toward him, Digger gave the ball to Hank and said, "Go on inside, okay?" Hank didn't argue. Hank never argued with Digger because he looked up to him too much. He bounced the basketball once and left. Digger hooked his thumbs in the front pockets of his jeans. "What's up?" he asked, kind of squinting his eyes at me. He suspected why I was there, I thought, and I stopped, hesitating. All those years we'd known each other, all the laughs we had, the plans we shared, the trouble we got into, spun by in a blur. But I realized we could never go back to the way it was. Already, the friendship had changed. "You know I'm working at the D'Angelo's now, right?" I asked. Digger just kept staring at me. "Well, I found something over there today when I was raking up near the boathouse." His expression didn't change, but I saw Digger's chin lift up a little. "I found my dad's drill." Digger arched his eyebrows. "So?" "So I'm wondering how it got there," I shot back, ticked off that he was making this difficult. "I'm wondering why it has flecks of red paint on it." Digger swallowed. We locked eyes.
"Beats me," he said.
"Come on," I argued. "We both know what you did. JT's already told me." Digger frowned and his lips parted as a scared, hurt look softened his steely expression. I was sure he'd admit to it then.
"Where is it?" he asked. "Where's the drill?"
"Back there," I lied. "I left it where I found it."
"Why? What do you care?"
"I don't care," Digger snapped, toughening up again.
"And I don't know what you're getting at, Brady."
We stared at each other for a few seconds.
"I gotta go," Digger said, pulling his thumbs from his pockets and turning away while I stood there like an idiot, watching him.
"Digger!" I called out. Faster and faster he walked, but he never looked back. When the screen door slammed, I kicked at a stone and stomped back to where my bike lay on the ground. Tossing the backpack on, I yanked up the bicycle and hopped on, kicking hard at the pedals. I worried that I was being a coward, letting him walk away the way he did. Questions hammered at me. Should I turn around and force him to admit it? How? How would I do that? Should I tell my parents? Should we call the police? I didn't know, so I kept on pedaling. When I got to the road, I headed for home. Riding up our driveway, I saw that Mom's car was gone. Under a flower pot, I scooped up the hidden key for the side door and let myself in. The house was silent, except for Tilly's toenails clicking down the tiled hallway as she came to greet me. I saw on the counter a lemon cake my mother had made for the Memorial Day picnic. Tilly licked my hands, and I touched her on the head before letting her out the back door. Next thing I did was take the drill out of my backpack and hide it, because I was mixed up. Afraid one minute, angry the next. I needed time to think. In the basement, I opened up a cupboard underneath Dad's workbench and pulled out a box full of rags. Lifting a handful of old curtains, I stashed the drill deep down at the bottom, then pushed the box back underneath. Tiny Tim, on a shelf nearby, heard me and crawled out of his newspaper nest, so I let him sniff my finger, then I gave him a few sunflower seeds. Back upstairs, I suddenly realized that in my haste at leaving the D'Angelo's, I hadn't put a single thing away. I hadn't even closed up their garage. I moaned and slapped my hand against my thigh,
then called Tilly in and got back on my bicycle. Right away at the D'Angelo's, I sensed something wasn't right. As I walked down the hill to the boathouse, I heard a noise, like a door closing, and froze, mid-step. My eyes darted around. I didn't see anyone, but I noticed that the garbage bag I had filled with brush and trash had been spilled out. Forcing my feet to move, I made my way toward the boathouse and saw that the trash was strewn everywhere, like it had been kicked around, and that the rake I had dropped when I found the drill now leaned up against the building. Cautiously, I opened the door to the boathouse. "Who's here?" I called in. At first, silence. But then, a soft scraping noise confirmed my suspicion, and Digger slowly stood up from where he'd crouched behind a grain barrel in the corner. Because of the way the light came through the boathouse, he was a silhouette, but I knew the compact, lean body and the way he held his muscular shoulders back. "What are you doing here?" I demanded.
"You know darn well what I'm doing here, Brady."
"You're looking for the drill," I said. Digger stepped around the barrel.
"And if you know what's good for you, you'll give it to me."
"It's not here."
"Well then, if you picked it up, it's got your fingerprints on it too, doesn't it?"
I scowled. "I had my work gloves on," I said, but the truth is that I had taken my gloves off before I picked up the drill. It never occurred to me that I might be handling evidence. Digger's voice started to sound panicky.
"I'm telling you, Brady, if you don't get rid of that drill and keep your mouth shut, you'll be in a lot of trouble."
"You did do it, didn't you? You put holes in Mr. D'Angelo's kayak."
Digger didn't say anything, but I took the silence to mean yes.
"You and JT?" I pressed.
Digger's mouth became a tight, straight line.
"You could never prove it."
An image of the red kayak lying on the bottom of the river flashed through my mind.
"Why?" I threw up my hands. "Why'd you guys do it?"
Digger looked away for a second, and when he looked back at me, his voice had lost its angry timbre. "You remember the day we went over there in your boat, Brady? The day we had us a smoke?" I settled my hands back down on my hips, recalling an afternoon in early April when Digger said he had something to show us, and the something turned out to be a cigarette.
"Yeah," I said, frowning. "I remember."
"Well, think back on it," Digger told me.
So I did. I thought back to how we had gone there, to the D'Angelo's beach, because it was a favorite spot of ours. We hadn't been worried about the new property owners seeing us, because their new house was out of sight, up the hill beyond their new three-car garage. Nearby, Mr. D'Angelo's new red kayak rested on two wooden sawhorses. We'd already seen the kayak. We three just happened to be at the 7-Eleven a few weeks previous, when Mr. D'Angelo pulled into the parking lot with the new kayak strapped to the top of his silver Porsche. It was quite a sight, because the kayak was longer than the car. Agape, we'd stood on the sidewalk with our sodas while he waved and dashed into the store.
"Probably needs to run in and buy a Rolex," JT had joked.
"Yeah, or a diamond stud to put where the sun don't shine," Digger had muttered.
The kayak rested on the sawhorses by the D'Angelo's dock the day Digger tried to get us to smoke.
"Come on, what are you afraid of?"
Digger had goaded me, shoving the cigarette in my face. "I had an uncle who died from lung cancer," I'd told him. "Carl's dad, in fact, and I didn't want anything whatsoever to do with smoking." Digger had cupped his hands around the cigarette to relight it after the wind put it out. Then he blew smoke out the side of his mouth like an old pro and offered it to me again.
"One puff ain't gonna turn you into an addict."
I had to screw up my face to make the point. "They make me gag." So Digger had turned to JT, thrusting it at him.
"For crying out loud, you weakling. It's not like you're gonna keel over and die right here on the spot."
Digger had a way of pushing JT around, and darned if JT didn't accept that cigarette, take a quick puff, and hand it back.
It was at that moment that Mr. D'Angelo had shown up with a golf club in his hand.
Scared the you-know-what out of us.
He must have been behind the house, practicing his swing or something, and heard us talking.
"What are you guys doing?" he'd asked.
JT was coughing, but we'd both stepped away from Digger, who brought the cigarette down quickly and pulled his incriminating hand behind his back.
"I see," Mr. D'Angelo had said. "Look, it's none of my business if you guys are smoking, but it is my business when you're on my property. You guys need to leave. I catch you here again, I'm calling your parents."
I had hung my head, I was so ashamed. It was only a couple of weeks before that I'd babysat for Ben all afternoon.
"That's it. Out of here," he had ordered us.
"I'm sorry, sir." I had tried to apologize. "We didn't mean anything." Mr. D'Angelo had spun away. He didn't even wait to make sure we were gone. We did leave, though. Got right in my boat and went home. I was so ticked off at Digger, I could barely stand to look at him. When we got back to the dock at my house, Digger was itchy for revenge.
"Let's do something to get back at that creep."
Except he didn't say creep. I had waved a hand at him.
"I've got homework. I'm going in."
"You then," Digger had ordered JT. "You owe me one for the other day when Curtis was hitting on you."
Curtis was an incredible bully at school. They had set off down our driveway, arguing, while I went inside. I had never looked back at them, and it had never, ever occurred to me that they didn't blow off their steam and go home that day. That instead, they went down to my dad's workshop, stole the drill and the glue, and sneaked back to the D'Angelo's beach. I squeezed my eyes shut, recalling these events. When I opened them again, I looked sadly at Digger. "You did it because Mr. D'Angelo kicked us off his property?"
"He didn't need to talk to us the way he did," Digger argued. "But you know damn well, Brady, it goes a lot deeper than that. I hate D'Angelo. How the hell did I know his wife was going to take the kid out for a spin in that kayak?"
I shook my head, not wanting to believe what I was hearing.
"Look, Brady," Digger pleaded as he came up to me, "no one knows what happened. If you get rid of the drill and don't say anything, no one will ever know, and none of us will get in trouble."
"But Digger, it was wrong, man. I mean, Ben's dead."
Suddenly Digger grabbed the front of my shirt. "You think telling the cops is going to change any of that? You think telling the truth brings the kid back?"
I knocked his hand off and pushed him away.
"No." Digger came back at me so angrily, he practically spit in my face. "It just makes it worse, because then they'll accuse us of murder."
"Murder?" I repeated in disbelief. I stared at him.
"Yeah, murder. They'll send us all to reform school. JT, me, and you too," he railed, thumping me on the chest with his finger. "Because don't you forget, Brady, it was your frickin' idea in the first place."
Chapter 16. My mother's cool, gentle hand on my forehead was like an ice cube on a bonfire, I thought. She had no idea the torment that ravaged me inside, even though I was stretched out, quiet and still, on the living room couch, Tilly on the floor beside me.
"You don't look so good, Brady. What's wrong?"
"My stomach," I told her. The last thing I wanted to do was go to a Memorial Day picnic with my parents.
"Your stomach," she repeated.
"What did you eat for lunch?"
"Chicken," I mumbled. "Mrs. D'Angelo left me some chicken."
Mom sucked in her breath.
"Chicken?
I'll bet that was it. You've got to be so careful with chicken."
"I'll be all right," I argued. "It's just a stomach ache. You and Dad go on ahead."
"You're sure?" she asked with a pained expression. "I made that lemon cake you like."
"Mom, please. The last thing I want to do is eat."
She dropped her hands in her lap and nodded sympathetically.
"Well, can I get you something before I go? A ginger ale? An ice water?" I barely moved my head. Nothing. After my father was done showering, they dragged a cooler across the floor in the kitchen, dumped in a bunch of ice, and packed up stuff. It took them so long I thought they'd never leave. But finally, Dad came to the doorway and said, "We won't be late. If you feel better and change your mind, call us at Uncle Henry's." "Okay," I replied, keeping the back of my hand over my eyes. As soon as I heard the door latch, I stood up and went to the kitchen window to watch them drive away. I bit my thumbnail, and then I actually cried a little because I did not know what to do. I sank back down in a kitchen chair, then leaned forward and held my head in my hands. The right thing was to go to the police and tell them what happened. It was so obvious. But then I started thinking about how much trouble we'd all be in. What if Digger was right about the murder charge? About us all being to blame? Even if I didn't take part in drilling the holes, it was my idea. Reform school would be awful, and it would just kill my parents. They wouldn't be able to face any of the neighbors again. They might even want to move. But how could they? Dad's work is here, on the river, in the workshop. We loved it here. This was home. I stood up and started to pace the room. If I said something, if we all ended up in trouble, then JT and Digger might never, ever talk to me again. I knew how much it had hurt the past month, them shutting me out. Imagine what it would be like forever. Not only that, but all the kids at school would think I was a snitch if I told them my two best friends. Even if I got in trouble, too. I would have to go to school someplace else. Mom and Dad would have to get permission for me to go to high school in Kent County or something. I stopped walking and slapped a hand on my forehead. Tilly whined. My pacing had confused her. I knelt and scratched behind her ears for a minute, and while I did, I looked into her soulful brown eyes, wishing she could tell me what to do. "Come on, let's go outside," I told her. We walked down to the water, and for a long time I sat cross-legged at the end of the dock while Tilly sniffed around in the marsh. The soles of my shoes were still caked with chicken manure, but I didn't care. I pulled my Swiss Army knife out of my pocket and must have opened and closed it 100 times. But I couldn't seem to come up with a decision about what to do with the drill. Turn it in? Keep it hidden? Get rid of it? What? Maybe no decision was my decision, I thought. I closed up the knife and slid it back in my pocket. When Mom and Dad came home at 10:30, I met them in the kitchen and told them I was feeling better, even though I wasn't really. "Thank goodness," Mom said, cutting me a thick slice of leftover lemon cake. "I worried you had food poisoning." I sat at the kitchen table eating the cake with a glass of milk, but I couldn't finish. "Why don't you get some sleep?" Mom said. "It's been a long day." Boy, she had no idea just how long it had been. "I will," I said. But after my parents went to bed, I stayed at the kitchen table. A moth had come in the door and was trying to beat itself to death on the light over the kitchen sink. It got to me after a while, although it sure was entertaining Tilly, who sat at attention and monitored its every move. Between the annoying smack and flutter and the lump of cake that sat in my stomach, I felt I had to do something. So I finally did go to bed, even though I knew I couldn't sleep. Mrs. D'Angelo returned a couple days later, but she came home alone, and she didn't seem happier. She had those dark pockets under her eyes again, like she hadn't slept either, and her hair was pulled into a skinny ponytail that didn't look clean. I knew I couldn't ask, but I wondered what had happened with her husband, and I wondered if he still blamed her for Ben dying. "Did you see the boathouse yet?" I inquired gingerly. Mrs. D'Angelo sat at the table in her bathrobe, half-heartedly trying to make a list of chores for me, but she perked up a little when I asked. "No, I haven't," she replied, looking up at me. I found myself watching her, but every time she moved her eyes toward mine, I focused on something else.
"Show me,"
she said, putting down the pencil and grabbing her coffee. We walked down the hill to the boathouse together. Over the past 2 days, I had cleaned out the entire place and had 18 leaf bags tied up ready for the trash, along with 2 big piles of junk, one about 5 feet high for the landfill, and one with some decent stuff, including a porch swing and a twin-size bed frame for the Salvation Army.
"Good job," she complimented me. "I can't believe you did all this."
"My dad's got a pickup truck," I told her. "He said we could come get this stuff one evening when he's done work and haul it out of here for you."
"That would be great."
She really seemed amazed.
"You must have worked like a dog, Brady."
"It was hot," I conceded, staring at my shoes.
"Well, I think a bonus is in order."
"No," I protested. She looked at me funny, maybe because I had practically shouted at her.
"I'm going to insist," she countered, folding her arms. "Brady, if you work for me, you get paid."
I didn't want to fight her, and I didn't want to make a big thing out of it.
"Just regular hours," I agreed weakly. "Please, nothing extra."
Honestly, the money meant nothing to me, and I was beginning to wonder about something else. While she was turned away, examining an old peach basket I'd put in the throwaway pile, I sucked in my breath. When she turned around, I warned her.
"I don't think I'll be able to work for you." "Brady, but why?"
Her disappointment surprised me, made me sink back. I licked my lips, bit them. I couldn't bear to add to her problems.
"Well, not for a while anyway," I replied. "See, I've, got exams this week, and I need to study." "Oh, exams. Sure, I understand."
I had to think fast, because that only bought me a few days.
"You scared me," Mrs. D'Angelo said. "I'm not sure I'd know what to do here without you."
"But that's just it, see? Because after school's out, I'm going up to Rhode Island to visit my cousins." I said this even though I wasn't sure Mom had actually made those arrangements.
"Oh.
It was planned a long time ago," I added, sounding apologetic.
"It's okay, Brady,"
she assured me, smiling and patting me on the arm so I wouldn't feel bad about leaving her.
"That's important, too."
I sighed, feeling a little relieved. It gave me 2 weeks. Exams, a trip to Rhode Island, 2 weeks and time away from her. Time away from everybody, I thought. Maybe that's what I needed.
Or was I just running away?
Chapter 17. "Hey there, stranger," Carl called out. I hadn't seen Carl for a while, but he came that morning to pick me up in the ambulance because it was the last day of school. "How's it going?" he asked as I opened the passenger door. "You been staying out of trouble?" I stepped up into the vehicle and slid onto the seat. "Yeah, final exams will do that for you." I tried to laugh as I pulled the heavy door shut, but his question wasn't funny. I was in a heap more trouble than I'd ever been in my whole life. Carl started off down the driveway. "How's the job going for Mrs. D'Angelo?" "Okay. I'm not working this week because of exams, but I've been mowing the grass and stuff." Carl was kind of quiet for a few seconds, and I hoped he didn't think it was weird, me working for her after what had happened. I'd been worried about how people would see it, I guess, especially kids at school. I looked over at him, but I couldn't see his eyes because of his dark glasses. "I'm making really good money," I pointed out. "Dad even said it was good I had another job this summer, because crabs are few and far between." Carl came back to life. "Yeah, I hear the season started out pretty slow." As we rode along, I wondered if I should tell Carl about the drill. I even imagined us pulling up behind the dumpster at the 7-Eleven for a few minutes so I could fill him in on what had happened. He'd listen. I knew he would. Then I could ask him what he thought I ought to do. I bit hard on the inside of my cheek. It still scared me to think of anyone else finding out.
"How'd you do on those exams?" Carl asked, breaking into my thoughts.
"All right, I guess. I was pretty sure I'd done okay, although not as well as I could have. I had a hard time concentrating," I said. "I don't know why."
A lie, because I knew darn well what was on my mind. All week long, every time I saw JT or Digger, we avoided one another. Until the day Digger caught up with me after school when I was cutting across the field by the tennis courts. I'd been heading for the post office, where Mom was picking me up. She did that sometimes, to avoid all the traffic in the parking lot when school let out.
"Brady, hold up," Digger had called. "I've been looking for you all day."
I had waited for him to catch up. Nervous and fidgety, Digger had stood there, rubbing his hands together.
"Look, I just wondered what you ended up doing, you know, with that drill."
Just like Digger to get right to the point.
"Nothing," I'd told him.
"Nothing? What do you mean, nothing?"
"Just what I said, Digger. I didn't do anything with it. It's at home." He had leaned toward me.
"What? Are you crazy?"
"Hidden. It's hidden. Okay?"
Digger had rolled his eyes dramatically and shook his head.
"Jeez, you can't take the chance, Brady. You gotta get rid of it."
"Yeah, yeah," I'd mumbled, turning away.
"Come on, it's for the best," Digger had called after me. "Just do it, Brady. Then everyone will forget what happened."
That's what stopped me. The bit about everyone forgetting, because I knew no one would. Never in our lifetimes would anyone ever forget what had happened. I swung right around without missing a step and walked straight back to him. Must have looked pretty angry, too, because Digger stepped back and balled up his fists, lifting them up above his waist, like I was getting ready to take a punch at him.
"Let me put it this way," I'd said, point blank. "What if it was Hank or Leanne, your little sister, in that kayak, Digger? Huh? What if Hank or Leanne froze to death in the river that day? You think you could just walk away and say everybody would forget about it?"
A cruel thing to say, because I knew how much Digger loved those kids. He was always looking out for them. Always.
But I had to make him see.
Digger was speechless. Slowly, he brought his hands down. Turning, I stomped away again, all the way across the field to the post office. But opening the door to Mom's car, I glanced over the roof and saw that Digger was still standing there in the field. I stared out the window of the ambulance thinking back on this just as we came up on Digger's house. Carl slowed down because there was a police car in the yard. Thoughts scrambled in my head. Did the truth get out? I sat up and a muscle tightened in my chest.
"Big fight there early this morning," Carl said, stopping.
"Here? At Digger's?"
"Yeah."
My eyes widened. I wondered if Digger's father had let him have it, if he found out the trouble Digger was in and flew off the handle.
"Same old thing," Carl said. "The old man beating up on his wife."
Carl knew all this stuff because he listens to the police radio. Plus, a lot of those police and firemen hung out together.
"I hear she took the kids over to her sister's in Denton," he said.
"Digger's mom always does that," I told him. "Every time they have a fight, she takes the kids and leaves. Then 2 days later, she comes back." We stared at the mess in Digger's front yard. Tires, rusted wheel rims, an old automobile frame up on cinder blocks, a large wooden spool from some wire Digger's father had hauled once. I turned to Carl, hesitating a little before I asked, "Do you know what the fight was about?" Carl shook his head.
"Nah, probably wasn't nothing to fight about. It's just him, old man Griswold, drinking and being ornery." He shook his head. "Digger's mother ought to have that guy arrested."
I sighed with relief, then looked back at Digger's house. Even if I was mad at Digger for what he'd done, I couldn't help but feel a little bit sorry for my old friend. "Digger's mom is too afraid to do anything," I said. "I remember once Digger told me how his parents had such a big fight in the middle of the night that he took his little brother and sister and walked over to his grandfather's house. I always thought that was so sad, Digger and those little kids
padding down the road, dead of night in their slippers, and to get away from their own parents.
A real shame, Carl said. He shifted out of park and drove on. I'm sure Digger won't be in school today.
No, I guess he won't, I agreed, realizing at the same time that Digger would miss the ceremony this afternoon, the one where we graduated from middle school. At 2 p.m., the entire school shuffled into the auditorium, where each of us eighth graders was awarded a certificate and a discount coupon to King's Dominion, an amusement park down in Virginia. A few kids got some awards, most musical, most athletic, that kind of thing. I stood twice for recognition, once with the kids who were on the honor roll all 3 years, and second because I played on the Seahawks tournament-winning basketball team. Half a dozen parents came to watch, but most of our parents had to work, including my own. After the sixth and seventh graders went back to class, we stayed for refreshments. A couple mothers had a table spread out with plates and napkins and a big white bakery cake that had congratulations written on it. It looked nice, but that type of cake is way too sweet for me. I didn't even take a piece, just picked up a paper cup full of lukewarm green punch and sipped at it. Afterward, while I was kneeling down to clean out my locker, I was surprised to hear JT's voice. Brady, he said. Despite everything, I was glad to see him. Hey, I said, standing up. How's it going? JT asked. Okay, I replied, scratching the back of my neck. I wondered if he was going to ask about the drill, too. How about you? JT shrugged. My dad's still sick. That's too bad, I sympathized. So I've been working a lot. A long moment followed when neither one of us said anything. I reached into my locker and peeled off the class schedule taped inside the door. I just wanted to thank you, JT said. I frowned. For what? You know. He glanced around suspiciously, then lowered his voice to a whisper. For not saying anything. What were we now, a bunch of criminals? I crumpled the schedule in my hand. JT seemed anxious. He kept licking his lips. So, maybe you want to come over tomorrow? I can't. I'm going up to Rhode Island to see my cousins. As I said that, I wondered if he'd think I was lying because of how he made up a story about seeing his cousins right after Ben died. JT hung his head. Brady, I just wondered if we could, you know, like, be friends again. We allowed our eyes to meet. Of course I wanted to be friends. More than anything else in the world, I wanted us to be friends. I didn't want anything to change in my life or his. But it didn't mean I wasn't angry at him for what he did with Digger. JT shrugged. I just want us to be friends. That's all. Yeah, sure, I replied softly. Is that a yes or a definite maybe? JT asked, his voice lifting a little. A definite maybe was an oxymoron. The slightest glimmer in his eye caught mine before he raised his hand. Have a good time in Rhode Island. Call me when you get back, he said, curling the fingers in his hand and cuffing me lightly on the shoulder. Chapter 18. The airfare to Providence, Rhode Island was too expensive without reserving a seat way ahead of time, so my mom purchased an Amtrak ticket online and took me to the train station in Baltimore early the next morning. It was a 2-hour drive to Baltimore from where we lived on the Eastern Shore. When we arrived, Mom bought us coffee lattes and a huge gooey Cinnabon, which we shared with 2 plastic forks while we waited on a wooden bench. This trip will be good for you. I just hope you're careful, Mom said. I'll be all right, I promised. Honestly, I looked forward to the 8-hour trip by myself. I had a backpack full of stuff just for the train. My CD player, snacks, a book to read, plus a lot to think about. In New York City, just stay on the train. Even though it stops, don't get off, she reminded me. I regarded her coolly. Mom, I know. I'll be fine, I insisted, lifting the cup of latte and blowing at the steam.
When I looked at her again, she was gazing at something on the ground, and I noticed for the first time how tiny lines had clustered around her eyes. Had they always been there? Or was she worried? Had the past month been hard on her, too? Gently, I asked, "What will you and Dad do while I'm gone?" She looked up and started to smile. "Work in the garden, probably. And your father needs shoes. We might take a ride over to the mall one day." The mall was in Annapolis, over the Bay Bridge, 90 minutes from Bailey's Wharf. I was a little sad they'd be going without me. I speared the last big bite of Cinnabon and started cutting it in half with the edge of the fork. "Brady," Mom said, her voice changing, "I'm worried about you and your friends." I stopped cutting. "What do you mean?" "I don't know," she crinkled up her eyes. "You boys never see each other anymore." I nodded, agreeing, and wondered if my mother had further suspicions. "Is it because of what happened with Ben?" she asked. I hesitated, but then I said, "Yeah." Mom waited for me to say something more, but I didn't. "Unfortunately," she began, "sometimes people just don't know what to say when there's been a tragedy. Maybe JT and Digger feel like they need to give you some space for a while." I studied her as she spoke and decided she didn't suspect anything more. "You're right," I told her. "I think that's all it is." Just then my train was announced, and I practically jumped up, flustered, eager to escape, the Cinnabon container still in my hands. Mom stood with me and brushed some crumbs off my shirt. "Why don't you have the boys over when you get home?" "Good idea," I agreed quickly, handing her the pastry. "Here, Mom, you can have the rest." She set the box down and gave me a hug goodbye. I was lucky when I climbed aboard and found a window seat because the train was pretty full. A real mix, it seemed, of people with loud, noisy kids on vacation and quiet, well-dressed business types. Quickly, I stashed my duffel bag in the overhead compartment. The man I would sit beside had his laptop open and his New York Times folded up and stuffed into the side of his seat. He had to pick everything up and turn sideways for me to get by, but he was nice about it. When the train started moving, he went back to work, tapping away on his laptop. I pushed my backpack up against the seat in front of me and got comfortable, then watched all the dumpy backyards and trash-filled alleys slide by as we pulled out of Baltimore. For a long time, I stared out the window until I realized that the city had slipped away. I leaned forward to unzip my backpack and rifled around inside until I found my CD player. I knew I needed to make a decision on this trip about what to do with that drill, but I didn't want to start thinking about it yet, so I put some music on, adjusted the earphones, and settled in for the ride. Up ahead, the train, like a snake, was making a gradual right turn, granting me a clear view of the engine and the cars in front of mine. It reminded me of the steam train ride my parents took me on years ago. The trip was a birthday present when I turned 9, and JT and Digger had come along. The train ran out in western Maryland, which is pretty far away, so we drove out late one afternoon and spent the night at a Holiday Inn. The next day, we boarded the train in Cumberland and rode up a mountain to Frostburg and back. We all got cinders in our eyes, but we had a blast on that train ride. Just thinking of it again made me realize how, growing up, we three were together all the time, camping out, exploring the woods, shooting baskets, fishing. We loved playing pirates, too, and talked all the time about how we'd grow up to be Navy SEALs. My dad even helped us make our own boat once. Boy, we loved that little dinghy we made. We'd row it all the way down the Corsica River to Pioneer Point, where the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. has a summer place. The Russians had buoys out in the river for their boats, and we'd row up, quiet as we could, beside them, then suddenly sing the national anthem, real loud, because everybody said those buoys were bugged. We sure did have us a time, I was thinking, and it was pretty neat, sharing a dream with JT and Digger. But there's no way I'll ever end up a Navy SEAL. This'll sound crazy, I know, a kid like me from the boonies on the Eastern Shore.
But what I want to do someday is design buildings, maybe even parks and stuff. At home, on the shelf next to my basketball trophies, I have a whole city of cardboard buildings that I carved out with my X-Acto knife. JT, his real name is Jeremy Tyler, is not likely to become a Navy SEAL either. His father probably wants him to take over the family business one day. It's only the biggest chicken farm in the county, with flocks of 50,000 birds at a time. But the thing is, JT's a total computer geek. Or genius, depending on the way you want to look at it. I remember how one Friday, JT, Dad, and I took a shopping list over to Computer Renaissance in Annapolis, bought the parts, and JT put together a computer for us that weekend. DVD driver, CD burner, the works. JT's future is definitely cyber, not chicken. Just then the train crossed a wide body of water, which I figured to be the Susquehanna River. We'd be crossing into Delaware next, I figured. But Digger? Would Digger become a SEAL? I thought about that. Maybe. Maybe one day he would. Either that or a Marine. He loves everything about the Marines, right down to the food they eat. JT and I, we'll pig out on bagel bites and frozen cheese pizza, and we can put away a whole bag of spicy nacho chips between us. But Digger would turn all that good food down in a heartbeat for a pack of MRE rations. MRE, as in meals ready to eat. Military food that comes in slick brown plastic bags. His mother picks them up for him every once in a while at the Army surplus store when she's in Annapolis. Digger made me try one once. We sat in the cab of his dad's dump truck and tore open the bags. Beef stew, applesauce, shrink-wrapped crackers, little packets of strawberry jam, iced tea mix, and hot chocolate. There were matches, too. For cigarettes? Plus two pieces of Chiclets chewing gum and one of those moist towelette things for wiping your hands off. Digger might as well become a Marine. He already looks like one with his buzz haircut. And you ought to see him in his hunting clothes grunting away, doing pull-ups on that rusted swing set in his backyard. My mother used to say if he applied himself, he could get into the Naval Academy. But I doubt it with the kind of grades he makes. His real name is Michael. Michael Griswold. But when he was little, he loved the backhoe so much, they called him Digger, and it stuck. Funny how we all had nicknames. Even my dog Tilly, which is short for Tileman Island, where she came from. My mind sure was drifting. Looking back, I could see there were things we three did that I would never forget. Boy, like the day we were playing ice hockey, and I went through the ice on that cow pond. It was Digger who saved my life. I can still see him sprawl toward me, his chin bleeding, his tooth chipped forever, reaching both of his bare, cold hands out to me while I thrashed around in that freezing water and couldn't get a grip because the edges of the ice kept breaking. Grab on, Brady, grab on! And JT in the background, holding Digger's ankles so he wouldn't go down with me. Suddenly, Ben's little face broke into my mind, scattering all those memories like ice chips. His little face, with the blueberry eyes and the big dimples. My hands curled up into fists, and my chest got tight remembering something Carl once told me. Hypothermia makes you shiver real bad. Then your muscles get rigid, and you kind of go into a stupor and pass out. I turned toward the window and bit my lip. God, I hoped Ben didn't suffer. I hoped that however it happened, it was quick. Real quick. So quick he didn't feel anything, or even have time to get scared. Just then the train's air conditioning, or something, must have kicked into overdrive, because I felt the chill blow right through me. I shifted position in that train seat and rubbed my arms hard. But for a long time, I couldn't get warm, and finally had to get up and pull a sweatshirt out of my duffel bag. Chapter 19 Brady! My cousin called at the top of his lungs. I set my bag down and whirled around to see my cousin Kevin waving on the train platform in North Kingston, Rhode Island. My other cousin, Emily, jumped up and down beside him, and my aunt stood smiling. We hadn't seen one another since last summer, when we vacationed together at Stone Harbor, New Jersey, and it struck me right away how much taller Kevin was. We were the same age. Did I seem bigger to him?
and Emily, who was only 7, had grown too. Her hair, short and blonde at the beach just months ago, was darker, and long enough for a ponytail, which swung behind her head as she ran up to me.
"What did you bring me?" Kevin asked, like a little kid, taking my duffel and grinning. He had a terrific smile, a million freckles on his face, and new wire-rimmed glasses that made him look smart.
"I brought you a piece of gum," I joked. I knew we had packed something for him, but I couldn't remember what. My aunt, who looks a lot like my mom, only thinner, gave me a hug.
"How was the trip?" she asked.
"Good," I replied.
"Were you scared?" Emily asked.
I shook my head and chuckled.
"No, it was fun."
I want to do that, Mom," she whined. "Can I someday? Can I take the train to Maryland by myself?"
"We'll see," Auntie Janet said, using a phrase that was very familiar to me.
It had already been a long day, but it was only 5 o'clock when we pulled into their driveway in Jamestown. Kevin had to leave right away for a clarinet lesson, so I put my things on the cot set up in his room and let Emily pull me into the basement playroom to see her Barbies.
"Do you want to play?" she asked eagerly.
I sat on a hassock and wrinkled my nose.
"I'll just watch, okay?"
It was sort of fun watching Emily. She made me think of my sister, though, because Amanda would have been the same age, only 1 month younger. I had a hunch my sister would have been a tomboy, like JT's sister, Kate. She would have learned how to bait trot lines, pitch a tent, and play basketball. But even so, I thought, sitting there, I wouldn't have minded a bunch of Barbie dolls and stupid girl stuff like that if she could have lived. When Emily finished dressing one of her Barbies, she held it up.
"Pretty cool," I said, taking the doll in my hands.
"What's this in her hand? A pocketbook?"
"No, silly," Emily exclaimed. "That's her Palm Pilot."
"A Palm Pilot? Boy, she's lucky. I don't even have one of those."
Emily lifted her chin and snatched the doll back.
"That's because she has a job. She runs a company, and she has to stay organized."
"Oh," I said, deciding I'd had enough of Barbie.
"Look, I think I'd better go help your mom with dinner." But upstairs, my aunt didn't need help. She told me to take a soda and go sit in the den.
"Turn on the television if you want."
I chose a Sprite from the refrigerator and turned on the TV, but there wasn't much on, so I clicked it off and started browsing through the family photograph albums on the bookshelf beside me. I discovered myself in the first one I opened, a picture of Kevin and me when we were little, sitting in our long johns on the couch. I had to grin, remembering how comfortable those pajamas were. I had a pair once with rocket ships, and another pair with lizards. The pictures brought back some neat memories. In one photograph, we all had our fishing poles. Me and Dad, Uncle Larry, Kevin, and my older cousin Joey, who was away at college now. In another picture, we were gathered around Auntie Janet's kitchen table, celebrating Joey's 12th birthday with a cake. Beneath Joey was a picture of Auntie Janet giving Emily a baby bottle. And on the same page, a picture of my mother hugging a smiling baby. Beside it was a photograph of the same baby, sitting in one of those little baby seats beside Mom. I didn't recognize the baby, so I glanced at what my aunt had written underneath the first picture. D holding Amanda, 3 months old. D is my mother. But of course, what other baby would my mother be holding? Quickly, I searched my memory as I set the book back down on my lap. The baby in the seat was smiling. She wore pink-footed pajamas, and there were dark curls on her head. Warm tears filled my eyes as I took in these details. After I blinked, everything blurred. Still, I didn't stop staring at that photograph, because nothing else came to my mind. It was the first picture I'd ever seen of my sister. My aunt saw what was happening.
"Brady," she said softly as she crossed the room with a spatula in her hands. I wiped at my eyes with one hand.
"Sorry," I apologized, "but it's the first picture I've ever seen of Amanda."
Auntie Janet sighed and sat down beside me. "I didn't even remember what she looked like," I told her.
"Oh, she was a beautiful baby, Brady."
my aunt smiled. But I couldn't smile back.
How come Mom doesn't have pictures for us? I asked.
I'm sure she has pictures. Somewhere, my aunt said. But you know, it was all so painful for your mother. For your father, too. I think that the only way your mother could deal with the grief was not to have any reminders around.
I looked up, wondering if Auntie Janet knew about the butterfly garden.
There's a locked trunk in the attic that has Amanda's stuff in it, I said. It's like Mom and Dad packed her up and put her away. Like they wanted to pretend she never existed.
Everybody has a different way of dealing with these things, my aunt replied. You need to try to understand.
I examined the photograph again and this time detected Dad's eyes and her little face. It's hard to explain, but his eyes are dark, like mine. It looked as though both Amanda and I had Dad's curly brown hair, too.
It doesn't mean you can't have a picture of Amanda, my aunt said. Would you like this one?
I didn't even have to think about it. I nodded right away. Carefully, she lifted the plastic page and removed the photograph of Amanda sitting in her little baby seat.
Here, she said, put it in a special place, and when you need to see your sister, she'll be there.
I pulled my wallet out from the back pocket of my jeans and opened it. There was a secret place under my ID where Mom had me keep an emergency $10 bill. I had to fold the photograph on one edge to make it fit, but I made sure the fold didn't touch Amanda. It was a comfort knowing I had a picture of my sister hidden away in my wallet. Later that night, while Kevin was in the bathroom brushing his teeth, I took her out for one more look, then tucked the photo back under the $10 bill and pushed my wallet deep down inside my duffel bag. Over the next few days, Kevin and I had a lot of fun riding bikes, playing video games, shooting baskets, skateboarding.